Hey guys, welcome to the very first episode of the Single Pod. This is Nicole recording from my bedroom.
And this is Joel recording from my bedroom. And I guess we've decided to start a podcast in the middle of the biggest health crisis this century. And here on the Single Pod, we're going to be breaking down some of the biggest news stories that happened in the week.
This week, we're going to talk about the end of the circuit breaker and what you should know about it. Singapore has also been mentioned in the international media a lot this week. And we're going to talk about the death sentence by Zoom and American journalist Megan Stack. Stay tuned at the end because we're also going to talk to psychologist Chloe Chan about mental health in the time of the coronavirus.
All right. So to kick off episode one, I guess the biggest thing we can talk about is the circuit breaker is affecting all of us here in Singapore. And for those who don't know what the circuit breaker is, it's basically a mini lockdown, which is named the circuit breaker. So Nick, when it was first announced, 4 weeks and then 8 weeks, I don't know how you felt, but man, I don't know how to feel about it.
Yeah, so the circuit breaker has definitely been challenging. I think I initially thought it was only going to last 4 weeks and I was like so ready for it to be over. And like suddenly it was like extended again. To like
another four weeks.
And so and I think it was a real like dampener and everything, obviously. But I mean, I understand why we need it. How has it been for you as well?
It's tough, man. I guess it's taken a toll where somehow the days just merge together, the days blend. You don't know what time it is, you don't know what day it is. It's not easy, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, this is, I mean, for all of us, this is something that's never really happened before. Like, I think the last big health crisis that Singapore had was like SARS in 2003. And yep. Like, we were like, how old? We were like seven at the time, like primary one.
Yeah,
oh my God. Like, all I remember from that period in like my life, like, it was just like a lot of temperature taking. And I like vividly remember Pochugang's rap. On SARS.
Chukong. Yes.
You know, I mean, yeah. I'm so happy he came out with another one, but like that is kind of all I remember about SARS, and I don't ever remember it being as serious as it is now.
Yeah, I think being that it was so many years ago, even when I asked my mom about it, she's forgotten how SARS was like, and it's pretty much new to her as well. And I'm guessing maybe it's because it was so long ago and it wasn't as serious as what it is now.
Yeah, I think I'm glad like we're finally and like this is like the last week of the circuit breaker, and we can start to see like a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel. But as it's been made abundantly clear that on June the 2nd, like there's not going to be some big switch and everything's going to just go back to normal. It's definitely going to be a gradual process. So, Joe, I know you've been doing some research about this. So what is going to change and what's not going to change?
I mean, I guess I really want to see my girlfriend. So, I've been keeping track. And sadly enough, phase one doesn't look like that's going to happen in phase one. Phase one is basically just opening up a little bit more. You're allowed to visit families, and elderly mostly. But where things get a bit better and a bit into the old days, it's when we hit phase two. So phase two, we're allowed to have social activities in small groups. A few businesses will slowly start to open again. And all you fit people with all your gym memberships, hopefully the gyms will open. But if not, outdoor exercise facilities will start to open. Sports and recreation on sites as well. So we can look forward to that. And phase three, what the government calls safe nation, is when we'll slowly start to open to larger groups, but again, not as big as we were used to. So social, cultural, and religious gatherings can resume, but in limited sizes. And seniors will be allowed to go about their day-to-day activities as well. So phase three will last as long as it has to take before a suitable and a reliable vaccine can be implemented and can be given to our population. But Nick, the thing I'm most concerned about here is when is the vaccine going to come?
Right. I mean, there's so much uncertainty about that. Like, I think it's very difficult to like ask people for like a timeline because, you know, it's a new virus. No one knows anything about it. Hopefully people can, people have enough support during this time and can kind of ride through this as long as it takes.
Yeah, I guess the phases are really just there as guidelines because it's not clear and the government hasn't told us when each phase would end. And it's really up to them to decide and assess the situation to see when it's right time to move into the next phase.
Yeah, so it's kind of like the rest of the world. I think we're all going through like this like huge experiment. And yeah. I think everybody's going to have to like see what works for them and what doesn't work. Like even just like listening to this like vague description of what's going to happen, it is quite unsettling.
Yeah, but I just... Maybe we'll just learn as we go, right?
Right. So Singapore is in international media a lot this week. And one of the big stories that a lot of international media outlets had picked up was the story about the issuing of a death sentence to a 37-year-old Malaysian man for drug trafficking offences. But what stood out in this story is that this sentence was delivered by Zoom. Yeah, when I first read this story, I was really shocked to kind of hear from the Supreme Court that it was kind of like that this case was considered to be essential. And yeah. It was like it wasn't put on hold like all the other court cases that were going on. I mean, I know we've been like, we as Singaporeans have been quite desensitized to the death penalty, but what do you think?
So I've seen many human rights groups and activists come on, condemn this as saying it's inhumane, it's cruel to do this. And I think more than just the penal code, what they're really getting at is how it was done over Zoom, you know, that it just made the situation seem so trivial and so unimportant. But actually, when we think about it, even though we're in Singapore and we're so used to it, like you said, but we're still talking about a person's life and how making a decision to end someone's life is not an easy one to make.
Yeah, so I think one of the reasons why this story has gained so much traction all around the world, not only because Singapore has carried out yet another death sentence that lots of the international media has criticized before, but like the fact that this sentence was issued by Zoom. And Zoom, like this platform, has been like such a part of our popular culture, like all over the world. I mean, countries that are on lockdown have been using Zoom as like a really essential way of communication. Like it's how we communicate with our friends, with our colleagues, with our family, and the fact that this platform that has kind of joined us all together has been used for such a grim purpose, I think, really shocked a lot of people.
Yeah, I agree with you, and it really makes you think what this kind of technology can be used for in the future.
So another big story that came out this week was an article by American journalist Megan Stack that really sparked like a lot of conversation in Singapore on social media. Mm-hmm. She kind of talks about how COVID-19 has brought out the dark side of Singapore. I think her article like really touched a nerve in a lot of Singaporeans. But I do think that she does have some valid points. I mean, even though she doesn't spend most of her article talking about it, I think one of the dark sides or the inconvenient truths that this health crisis has brought about in Singapore is the problems in the foreign worker dormitories and
that's right.
Yeah. And their living conditions. Mm. I mean, I can only speak for myself, but this was a section of the Singaporean population that I rarely ever think about. And I think a lot of people also rarely thought about them because they don't live near us and we don't really see them in our neighborhoods. But we forget that like these are the people that really do like build this island.
Yeah, I think this section of society is really one that we've neglected and really haven't been watching out for. There are up to 200,000 foreign workers living in dormitories alone, and there's no small number.
Right. I mean, look, like I think no one will deny that this was like a huge oversight on our part. Like I think we just kind of miss the fact that people in cramped conditions 12 to a room sharing one toilet could catch this virus.
Yeah.
And so what she said in her article about the foreign workers is absolutely true. But funny thing was that it wasn't really a big part of her article at all. Like, it took up maybe like a quarter of the article, or maybe even a fifth. I think she spent a lot of time talking about other things, about Singapore's coronavirus response. Yeah, and it all sounded a little familiar, don't you think?
A little too familiar, right? Every time we talk about Singapore government on an international scale, what are the things that come up? You know, freedom of speech, freedom of press, activities which are punishable by caning and by death. You know, these things have been talked about so often when it comes to Singapore and how we have laws in place, and it's overdone, Nick. It's been said one too many times.
I mean, look, like, her arguments about the foreign workers were just kind of undermined with all the pot shots that she took at every law that every Western journalist has criticized ever, you know? Yeah. I mean, look, we have our flaws, you know? Some people might not agree with the laws that we have now. I certainly don't, but I was just confused as to how a lot of the stuff that she said, like, even connected to how we're dealing with the crisis now anyway. I mean, she's been living in Singapore for a while, it seems.
Yes, 2 years.
But she seems kind of turned off by the fact that there are certain things that during this coronavirus crisis has been made mandatory. I mean, she seems to have an issue with enforcing a law that makes everyone wear masks. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, to me, it's interesting because I feel that the reason why we wear masks is to protect other people from us and to protect us from other people. And if wearing a mask was voluntary, then it kind of defeats the whole purpose of wearing masks. Yeah, I think it's interesting because, I mean, she does touch a lot on civil liberties and the infringement of rights in her article. But it's, I mean, if it's a matter of public health, I don't see how wearing a mask actually hurts anyone. How much inconvenience is it to people to just, you know, spare a thought for like the people that they're going to be around?
Definitely. And I mean, like you, Nick, I would choose safety over my own freedom, because without safety and without good health, I mean, then what's the point of freedom?
It's so interesting, like this buzzword freedom. Like wearing a mask doesn't infringe on your freedom at all.
It only
stops you from like breathing the fresh air. I mean, yes, it's hot in Singapore and you wear a mask and it sometimes it can get uncomfortable, but like, you know, I mean, am I going to die? No, right? Like I don't understand how it's a matter of freedom to wear a mask or not wear a mask. But I think that's how, especially in the US, is being characterized right now. Asking someone to wear a mask is an infringement on their personal rights for some reason.
Yeah, and I think they just don't like being told what to do. That's my take. You know, some people just don't like being told what to do, but
I mean, it is a cultural thing. People from different cultures have different propensity to follow the rules.
Definitely.
I mean, for you and me, definitely growing up in Singapore, I mean, we follow so many rules. And I find myself having to defend them whenever I talk to foreigners. Defend the rules, right?
I feel you right there.
Yeah. I mean, but I think it's something that lots of outsiders or like lots of people who are not from Singapore, they don't really understand that. I mean, and I really don't blame them. I mean, she did talk about how Singaporeans would side with the lady that took her photo and scolded her for not wearing a mask, rather than taking her side, because not only because she was in the wrong, but also because she's a foreigner. I mean, like, I kind of understand, but I don't think it's just because she was a foreigner that she was called out on not wearing a mask. But I think it's also because that she wasn't wearing a mask, and that endangers the health of other people.
Yeah, and I would call out a fellow Singaporean if they were not wearing a mask.
Oh, it's trust just... me. every Singaporean has called out every other Singaporean for not wearing a mask. I mean, like, have you seen it on Facebook?
I have. And I think, honestly, it's the right thing to do to call out people just the way you do it, right? And it's a matter of public health. One crack in the chain and, you know, the whole system fails, and everybody really needs to play their part to you know, fight this battle together as a team. And yeah,
I mean, I think it's not really just like the calling out people. I mean, sometimes people can be very rude, and I mean, we've seen that happen, right? Like, some people have been very vicious or very very aggressive. But I think the Singapore way is just like the fear of getting called out is what makes you wear a mask in the first place, right?
We've been,
like,
trained to conform since young.
Exactly. Like that's kind of how it goes. But I mean, if it's going to protect other people and it's going to be good for public health, I have no problem with it.
So we're in the 8th week of the circuit breaker here in Singapore. And I guess a phrase that keeps coming up these days is mental health. And the importance of mental health, especially during a time like this where, you know, we're cooped up at home, we're stuck at home, we're in close contact with our family members, and tension might be a little high, and we're hearing stories of stress at home as well. So we want to talk more about this.
So joining us today is psychologist Chloe Chan. Thanks for coming on the podcast, Chloe.
Thanks for having me, guys.
So can you tell us a little bit more about your work and what you do?
All right, yeah. So currently I work as a psychologist. I mainly do a lot of mental health work. So I do a lot of counseling, kind of care for individuals with mental health conditions, talk a lot about like stress and resilience and kind of managing a lot of like the day-to-day stresses in a crazy environment.
Cool. So I think psychologically speaking, like, why do you think the circuit breaker and social distancing measures have been like so disruptive for Singaporeans?
I mean, well, there's definitely a lot of changes to our day-to-day life. I mean, you just kind of think about how our entire daily routines, like we used to wake up at like 7:30, get to work, go to school, and that kind of, all of that has just kind of been turned over, and a lot of things have changed. And you kind of think of it as like almost as though you're going to a different country altogether. And how a lot of students, like foreign students, may have a lot of difficulty adjusting to that new environment. And circuit breaker is kind of like that. I mean, one is a huge change in your environment and your routine. And two, it's like you're cooped up, you know. So you kind of almost imagine what it's like to be in those animal shelters, and then why animals can sometimes go crazy just being cooped up and not having that freedom. It's almost similar in that sense. I mean, it really creates a very different level of stress and adjustment to this new environment.
I mean, I totally get that. Like, I'm graduating this year. And so, like, I think a lot of us, like, won't be having our convocations at schedule. And, like, in other places, they're having, like, virtual graduations or having them cancel altogether. And I think, like, lots of similar events, like weddings and funerals, have also, like, been impacted by this crisis, right? So, like, I don't know. Like, I feel like maybe, like, people might even feel, like, a sense of grief, like, over, like, the rituals that we have lost. And I want to know, kind of, like, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I think loss is definitely a pretty common theme. I mean, other than the obvious loss of freedom, but I think also a loss of like personal space. I mean, even if we just look at like the family level, when all of a sudden I don't know how big your families are, but I've got like 7 to 8 people living in my house right now.
Wow.
And if you don't have that personal space, that loss of personal space, that could have a huge impact on you. Talk about maybe even loss of financial stability. I mean, we know a lot of people who are losing their income, who are losing jobs. I mean, that's why we have so much of that kind of financial support kind of kicking in from our supplementary budget. So loss of employment, finances, relationships, right? So we talk a lot about how circuit breaker, we want to break the circuit, we don't want to break relationships. But with that, we kind of need some skills, we need some handles to manage that. So I think there's like the whole idea of loss is a generic overarching theme that we really see in circuit breaker.
Yeah, and I can totally relate to that, you know. So it's really been affecting a lot of us emotionally and maybe even physically. So, you know, we get that we have moments where we are stressed and we are feeling down. And I just want to know, like, when does it cross the line from when you're feeling down and feeling sad about a situation to when it becomes more serious and that's a pattern of maybe anxiety or even possible depression? And what are the signs that we need to look out for?
Yeah. Well, I guess there's always also a difference between like having like an acute stress reaction. So an acute stress reaction is something that we would say that, I mean, it comes really, really quickly and it's a stress reaction to a situation. So it could even be simple things like enlisting into national service. You know, some guys kind of have acute stress reactions towards enlistment. Some people have acute stress reactions towards moving overseas. But definitely when we talk about depression specifically, it affects like your physical being, your moods, your thoughts, your feelings, and all this kind of has to persist over a prolonged period of time. Yeah, so I mean, we'll observe changes in like mood swings, you know, sudden agitation, the sudden loss of energy, loss of motivation, loss of goals, and all of this kind of has to persist for a prolonged period of time before it could potentially be considered as MDD, major depressive disorder.
So during this period, how do you think that we should approach our friends and family, our loved ones, and really try to make sure that they're okay during this time?
Yeah, I mean, I think step one is that even having that thought about wanting to ask someone if they're okay. Peer support is really the best support that anybody can get. In fact, you know, so I mentioned about the IMH study that was done in 2016. So everybody was surveyed, 75% of them didn't ask for help. And when we look at those who do ask for help, it's really because they were given peer support. So kind of having their friends, they would kind of turn to a friend first rather than turn to a psychologist or a psychiatrist for help. And I think that the first thing to do is that, I mean, definitely behavioral changes is something that you as a friend would notice, right? Before, I mean, that's how you say, like, oh, this person's behaving weirdly, it's acting strangely, and kind of not themselves. And that's why that kind of like stirs up that concern in you. And so I think for me as a friend, I would just be like, you know, like, hey, Joe, you know, you haven't really been yourself, you know, when this thing happened, you got really mad and that's really not like you. And I just wanted to know, you know, is there something that's going on? You know, it's how can I help you? I'm here as a friend. And I think that when we bring up that behavior, we show them that like, hey, this is a behavioral change that we've observed in you. And I think that's also factual because like, you know, it could be nothing, right? It could be that Joel just didn't shave, not because he's sad. He just didn't shave because he feel like it, you know? Yeah, so when we bring up these behavioral changes, I mean, it could be something or it could be nothing. But if it's something, I'm glad that we asked. And if it's nothing, then hey, at least they know that you're paying attention.
Yeah, so during this pandemic, I think it is quite difficult, you know, to see your friends or to talk to them frequently. So how do you think people who need help should go about finding it?
Well, I think with COVID, our current situation is that, yeah, if you're not like a family member, you can't really see your friends. There are really a lot of telehelp that's available. So like, a lot of hotlines that you can call, which you can reach out to. But they've also kind of restarted the psychotherapies that are available. So for example, the psychologists, all the psychologists across Singapore have been applying for licenses and waiver, and as long as they are registered, they can continue to see patients face to face. There are also a lot of like telecounseling that's available. So it's similar to what I'm doing now. So you can either do it over the phone or we can do it over video conference. Video conference is kind of preferred. But yeah, so there are helplines that are available. And I guess like my best suggestion would be to kind of talk to your psychologist or psychiatrist to see if they are registered. They most likely are. And then you can always reestablish your sessions from there.
All right. Thanks so much, Chloe. It's been super insightful and I'm sure that our listeners really appreciated that and appreciate that help. You know, many of us have heard the word mental health be tossed around these past weeks, and we know that it's important to keep our mental health, but some of us don't know what to look out for, don't know what to do. And I think thank you for really putting that into perspective and giving us handles on what to do. And to close off, we just want to know, what have you been doing to pass time? I've seen you post TikToks and making a lot of coffees, and how have you been keeping busy? How have you been making this your new normal?
Well, I guess, you know, you just kind of keep yourself as occupied as you can be. For me, I actually still go to work. So I still go to work every other day. But on days where I'm not at work and it's kind of like after office hours, yeah, I mean, going for a run really does help, kind of exercising. Mm-hmm. I remember within like the first week of circuit breaker, I had gone out for a run like 3 times a week and I usually don't run at all. So just kind of getting some outdoors, doing what you enjoy, some hobbies. What was one thing that was really helpful for me in circuit breaker really was trying not to compare with what other people are doing. And then, you know, like sometimes when we compare, we'll be like, oh my goodness, this person is surviving circuit breaker so much better than I am. And how am I going to do this? Yeah.
I think we all feel that way.
Yeah, like some people are all of a sudden like master chef bakers, you know, and I can't even like heat up milk, you know, it's crazy. So, like for me, keeping myself sane was just about not comparing with how I'm coping and how other people are coping. So like you just do you. So like I love making coffee, so I just do that because that makes me happy. What was kind of different, and I think what helped me a lot in circuit breaker was about like trying to space myself up between like work and home, because when you're home and you're working, it's kind of difficult. And I think like what helped me was like what gets me in the mood. So for example, coffee helps you like be like, okay, I gotta be productive, you know, I got to like focus. And so I have a cup of coffee, it gets me ready for work. And then when I'm done at the end of the day, I'll be like, yep, I'm done with it. And I shut my laptop down, I log out of stuff. So it kind of creates like a psychological barrier that I can cross over to into going to like family time. And then I just go out and I hang out with my parents for a bit just to switch into that family mode.
Thanks so much, Chloe. You may not know how to boil milk, but you definitely know a lot more about mental health. So we really want to thank you for being our first guest on the Singapore and taking the time to share it with us. So mental health really is important. And for those of you out there who may feel like you're struggling, please reach out to the National Care Hotline at 1-800-202-6868.
Thanks for reaching the end of the very first episode of the Singapore. We hope you enjoyed it.
If you have any topic you'd like us to cover, or if you want to join us on the podcast, drop us an email at thesingapore@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you.
And that's all from us today. We'll see you guys next week.
Bye.
Bye.